If you like to cry and you like to express emotions on the highest level of unhappiness and the highest level of happiness, read the Ramayana. It is full of emotional transportations into the highest realms of interpersonal relationships and pure devotional service. It is the epitome of emotional ecstasies, both sides, happiness, distress. Ramchandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ramadi Murti Sukulandi Yamegna Tishtan Nanavatar Akaro Bhuvaneshu Kinchu Krishna Swayam Swamabhavat Paramam Pamanyo Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So Lord Ramachandra is the highest manifestation of the Personality of Godhead in the realm of Sri Vaikuntha Dham. And the Lord comes to this world for many reasons, to uplift the fallen conditioned souls into the realm of pure bhakti, to give them a chance to serve, to elevate those who are servant to a higher level of service, and to remove from the world demons, or those persons who actively work against religious principles, hardcore materialists. And by doing that, he does one very powerful thing. He reestablishes religious principles. Religious principles are the foundations for the human success of life. Material principles, at its best, allow for the body to maintain itself. But religious principles are the principles that give knowledge, happiness, and transportation back to the spiritual world. Ramchandra, unlike any of the other manifestations of the Godhead, is ideal in all aspects of existence. The perfect king, the perfect husband, the perfect devotee, the perfect son, the perfect principle of destroying irreligion, perfection in all levels. He does it with such graciousness and with such exemplary power. The story of the Ramayana is everywhere in the world in many places. It is deep in emotions, deep in devotion, deep in understanding how we can improve in our spiritual life. Krishna's pastimes are wonderful, but we can't imitate those things. We can get purified by hearing the glories of Lord Krishna and his associates in Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's the highest realm of spiritual existence. But Ram's pastimes not only purify us, but also teach us very, very powerful lessons on how to live life in such a way that we are always successful in whatever we do. It's a process of learning how to live in such a way that you can find knowledge, happiness, and pure love on all levels. To study these pastimes means to go deep into the mood of individual progress in our devotional life. You cannot help but learn more and more about your own self when you read and you hear about Ram's life. This morning, we spoke about the appearance of the Lord and how Dasarath, King Dasarath was the king of Ayodhya Dham. He was a powerful king. Ayodhya was a flourishing city in all aspects. It was opulent in material wealth. The citizens were religious, and there was no, what we say, inclamities in personal relationships and in the weather. Everything was ideal. It was practically, we might say, heaven on earth. But the king, although so successful in establishing such a wonderful kingdom without rivalries around the world, had one problem, a deep problem, something that disturbed his whole life, and therefore he could not enjoy anything he had. And what was that problem? He couldn't produce an heir to the throne. A king is a person who needs to leave behind when he departs someone to succeed him and propagate what he has taught and what he has established. He couldn't find the heir. He had, in those days, it was quite common that kings especially would have many wives. He had 353 wives. Three of them were prominent: Sumitra, Kausalya, and Kaikeyi. And learning about this great sage named Rishyasringa, I'm just giving a small little narration of what I spoke in length this morning, because many of you have already heard this talk. For those of you who didn't, I'll go on to something that I think is also very necessary for us to understand in Ram's pastimes. In this particular yajna, he commissioned one very powerful sage, a brahmachari by life, and then finally married and became the force to bring about a perfect yajna to establish the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ram, Lakshman, Shatrughna, and Bharat. Who are they? Ram is the incarnation of Krishna known as Vasudev. Lakshman is Sankarsana. Bharat was Pradyumna, and Aniruddha was Shatrughna, like that. The four manifestations of the four weapons of the Lord also manifested at these four personalities, and they came to give pleasure to the citizens of the world and at the same time teach religious principles. But also they were on a big mission. They had to rid the world of a very, very influential and a very, very powerful demon. His name was Ravana. You've all heard of Ravana, right? What is Ravana? Ravana means one who is expert at causing others unhappiness. Or we might even say, to be exact, according to the definition, one who makes everybody cry. That was Ravana. And he had power, influence, benedictions from the demigods, and great followers, much wealth, everything. But he was terrorizing the world in order to propagate and to proliferate what he had gained. And the Lord came in order to get rid of this demon and to again reestablish real religious principles. The life of Ram is amazing. This is the second in six lectures. We'll be giving four more in the next 2 days, both in the morning and the evening. And in those lectures, I'll try to give what I consider important religious messages, taking the pastimes of Lord Ram and his associates and understanding what are the messages for us that we can learn in these pastimes, how we can gain spiritual knowledge, how we can gain strength, and how to face adversities. Right? Life is full of adversities. In fact, life is full of uncertainties, and uncertainties really spell adversities. Because when you're certain, you feel less, what we say, anxious about the future. If your past is pretty good, you feel good about the future. If your past is not so good, you have the same feeling towards the future. This is the nature. But now we can change our past and make it very auspicious in all aspects by learning these deep messages that the Ramayana is about to teach us. Ram, now he appeared. Dasarath was, what we say, so happy. A beautiful boy with all attractiveness. Even as a little baby, he attracted the attention of everyone. he grew up fast. And as he grew up, he attracted the hearts and minds of everyone in his behavior and in his, what we say, personal beauty and personal strength. There were some demons causing some problems. And every time the sages would get together to perform a sacrifice, these two very powerful demons would come and right at the end of the sacrifice and destroy and defile the whole thing. A sacrifice is meant to bring about auspiciousness and benedictions for those who perform it and those who the sacrifice is directed towards. And generally, when sages perform sacrifice, they do it for the benefit of the entire world. They are interested in giving, what we say, benefits to others. And so sacrifices was a regular feature for great sages. But these demons would come right at the end and just destroy the whole thing. One of the persons who was in the sacrifice was, his name was Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni was a powerful, powerful sage. Previously he was a Kshatriya, now he was a Brahmin. He had power in both areas, as a fighter and as Brahminical Tejas. He was the perfect Brahmin. So every time these demons came, he didn't want to lose his Brahminical power by acting in a Kshatriya way. It wasn't his dharma. It wasn't his duty. So he was thinking, I have to do something. Therefore, he understood, in Ayodhya, a great personality is born. He should come and help. He went, Vishwamitra, when he came into the assembly of Maharaj Dasarath. Dasarath welcomed him with great honors and respect and gave him all the, what we say, the welcoming of a very important personality. After washing his feet and offering him nice drinks and so many other things, he said, how can we serve you? This is how one treats a guest. When a guest comes to one's home, one thinks, how can I serve the guest? A guest is seen in Vedic culture as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we treat a guest, we are also reflecting how we treat the Supreme Lord himself. A guest is considered to be very, very, even if it's an enemy, and you know it's an enemy, still you welcome and offer something. You may not disclose your mind and heart to an enemy, but at the same time, because the duty of those who live in household life is to welcome guests. So he welcomed and he made his entire kingdom at his disposal. Vishwamitra Muni, you are famous. You are powerful. You are a source of auspiciousness for all of us. Please tell us, how can we serve you? I am prepared to do whatever you request. Big mistake. He said, we are performing sacrifices in the forest. And these two very powerful demons named Maricha and Subahu, they come right at the end of the sacrifice when we're about to finish to get the benefit, and they destroy the whole thing. I could destroy them if I could with my own power, but that is not my position. Therefore, I have come to meet and request that you give me your two sons, Lakshman and Ram, and take them to the forest, and they can help in destroying these demons. Ram was 16 years old at the time. Of course, he was a fully developed, powerful personality. But Dasarath, his wonderful son, was seeing his son as, he is my son, he's still a young boy. To go and fight against these powerful Rakshastras who have mystic power, who can disappear and appear at will, I can throw all kinds of weapons. This is no match for Ram. And he's still a young boy. Let him grow up. Let him develop. Vishwamitra became a little concerned. You have given your word, and now you're giving an excuse. Dasarath said, but please listen. I am a powerful warrior. I have many armies. I will go to the forest with you, and we will rid the world of these demons. Vishwamitra didn't want to hear any excuses. He wanted Ram and Lakshman to go. Now you can imagine, you're a father with a wonderful son, and you don't really know the power of your own son. Or you can think of the power of the love you have and the love that he has for you. And to risk his life would be worse than risking your own life. You think like that. I would rather give my life than someone who is dear to me. So Dasarath reasoned that way, but Vishwamitra Muni didn't want to hear any excuses. You are a Kshatriya. You live by the honor of your own words. I am your guest. I have come on a request. This is not for me. This is for the benefit of the world. I'm asking you. Your sons are very qualified. They are much more powerful than you think they are. They will have no problem. Dasarath couldn't be persuaded. He was beside himself in anguish. At the same time, his minister, Vasishtha, came. Now Vasishtha was the chief minister, the chief spiritual minister. Sumantra was the chief, what we say, martial minister, and Vasishtha was the chief spiritual minister. Vasishtha and Vishwamitra Muni knew each other well. Maybe you have heard the story. Many years before, Vishwamitra Muni was a powerful king with many armies. And he came to the hermitage of Vasishtha. Vasishtha was there. He was a humble Brahmin. He would perform sacrifice. He would perform puja. And when Vishwamitra Muni came with all his armies, he welcomed him. And Vishwamitra Muni said, please give us some refreshments. We are very tired. So in order to please his guest, he had a particular cow. And that cow was a Chintamani cow. It was a cow that you could produce anything from its udder simply by chanting mantras. Powerful cow. So the cow came out. Vasishtha said, please supply food and drink and all comforts for Vishwamitra Muni and his entire army. In a few moments, the entire area was covered with luxurious and succulent drinks and foods of all kinds. There were hermitages where people could stay and relax and take rest if they wanted to. He provided all the comforts for the entire army in the most grand way. Wow. Vishwamitra Muni was amazed to see this cow do that. And after accepting all the gifts, Vishwamitra Muni says, you know, I am the king, and the best should belong to the king. So I want your cow. Vasishtha said, my cow is my life. I perform all my pujas and my sacrifices. She provides all the ingredients. Without her, I cannot perform my service. Vishwamitra Muni, he's a pretty tough person. When he wants something, you don't give him any excuse. He doesn't want to hear your side. So he was insistent. Finally, he started to take a rope and put it around the cow and drag the cow. The cow looked at Vasishtha and said, you're giving me up. Why are you giving me up? The cow didn't want to go, but Vishwamitra Muni was determined. The cow said to Vasishtha, please order me. And Vasishtha started chanting mantras and ordered the cows. produce soldiers. And out of her udder came thousands and thousands of soldiers and destroyed the whole army of Vishwamitamuni. He was the only one left. Haribo. So, Vishwamitamuni was thinking, my God, Brahminical Tejas is greater than Kshatriya Tejas. So he was defeated, he was humiliated, he left. He decided, I'm no longer going to become a Kshatriya or a king. Brahmins are better. Brahmins have more power than Kshatriyas. So he started performing austerities and pujas, chanting mantras, performed great sacrifices, and started to follow the Brahminical mark, the big Brahminical path. But he was simply interested in power. Prabhupada said he would sit with fires all around him in the summertime and chant mantras. In the wintertime, he would immerse himself in ice-cold water and chant. He became so powerful by austerities. Now, this is a problem. When you become powerful, but your power is material, which what was, Indra starts to think, this person wants my position in the heavenly realm. Because you can get a high position in the heavens through tremendous austerities. So Indra was thinking, this is not good. I have to destroy his austerities. So he sent one of his most qualified and attractive of all girls in his assembly named Menaka. Her name was Menaka. She was beauty personified and had all good qualities. She came while he was doing his meditation, and she had these ankle bells, and while she was walking, it was such a sweet charm. And then when he looked up, he saw even something even much sweeter than he expected. And he became infatuated. He put down his austerities. He got attracted. He married her, and it's a famous story. There was a beautiful girl born to them called Shakuntala. The life of Shakuntala is actually an epic that you can read about in the history of India. After some time, he decided, look at me. I used to be a powerful Brahmin with so much austerities. Now, I'm just a householder with nothing. So he gave it all up and went back to his austerities. This time he was determined not to get deviated in his exercise. So he started to meditate and he started to do all of his austerities again. Indra said, this guy doesn't give up, does he? So he sent another girl. Her name was Ramba. Ramba came. No. She didn't know what she was in for. And she, again, with ankle bells and sweet smiling and so many nice gestures of the feminine gender, she attracted his mind away from his meditation. But this time, in his attraction, he got angry. He said, Indra's at it again. So he glanced at her with the power of his austerity and he turned her into a piece of stone. She was just stone-like. Again, as soon as he did that, boom, all his austerities were lost. To become attracted, to become adverse, is two sides of the same material coin. In Krishna consciousness, we teach that to rise above the attractions and the aversions of this world and be situated in Krishna. Be situated on the platform of attraction to something that is higher. Now, as we practice Krishna consciousness, we don't come to that stage of detachment so easily. It takes determination. But this is the principle that gives one happiness when one is not attracted to anything in this world, nor sees everything in this world as simply a manifestation of the energy of the Lord. That's all. attraction and repulsion is like being blown by the wind, like a leaf blown in the wind. The mind is never steady. How to get over attraction and repulsion is come to the higher platform of Krishna consciousness. If you're hungry and someone says, here's something to eat, it may be simple food, but because the hunger is there and it's so strong, you'll take it. But if someone comes along with a nice feast, at the same time someone is coming along with a simple meal, you'll take what is nice, or you'll take what you like. So in the same way, when we are in Krishna consciousness, we may still like to feel some satisfaction through the attraction of this world, but it won't satisfy the heart, and it deviates our consciousness away from Krishna. Therefore, coming to the higher platform means getting the grand feast. being fixed in devotion to Krishna. And then the attractions and the repulsions of this world will still be in your life, but they'll have very, very little effect. As Prabhupada said, one who's fixed in chanting the holy names of the Lord is not disturbed in any condition. Fixed, like that. Vishramutta Muni, now realizing that his austerities and penances were simply only because he wanted to be a powerful Brahmin. That's all. And then he gave that up and started to understand that there's something higher than power, than Brahmin, and that is devotion to the Lord. And then he took up the process of devotional service. So now he's in the arena or the courtyard of Dasarath, and he's making this request. Vasishtha recognizes his old, what we say, not enemy. After Vishwamitra Muni became a devotee, him and Vasishtha became great friends. Devotees, sometimes when we have a relationship with someone and it's not on devotional level, it could be a little difficult, or it could be a little what we say, a cause of suffering. But as soon as we become devotees, it's the same person has a different relationship, because devotees get along with devotees. So Vasishtha and Vishwamitra Muni were great friends. So Vasishtha said to Dasarath, your son should go with Vishwamitra Muni. You have no worries. I give you my word. Dasarath always took the word of Vasishtha as his life and soul, because Vasishtha was such a pure Brahmin. Reluctantly, but obediently, he obeyed Vasishtha, and Ram went with Vishwamitra Muni. And that's a long, long, long story. Should I tell it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is the flavor that makes everything more flavorful. So, he took Ram and Lakshman to the forest. The sacrifice was going on. And these two demons, right at the end, powerful demons, manifested themselves and started to harass the sages, throw all kinds of unmentionable things on the sacrifice. They were destroying it. Vishwamitra Muni looked at Ram and said, Ram. Ram turned around and with one arrow, he shot that arrow and he killed Subahu. Finished him all. Should I do a second arrow? No. The second arrow, shouldn't cause too much distress with the devotees. I don't want to cause you any distress. He hit Maricha in the chest, and that arrow was so powerful that it knocked Maricha 800 miles, and he landed in the ocean. He was still alive, but barely, because he had another role to play later. And so the demons got the word not to mess with Ram and Lakshman. So then Vishwamitra had another, he said, we should go. There's actually a great tournament going on in a kingdom called Mithila. There's a great king, his name is Janaka. And Janaka has been blessed with a very priceless gift. That gift, he has two gifts actually. He has a beautiful daughter, and he also has a powerful blow that was Lord Shiva's personal blow. We should go to visit King Janak. So they went. They arrived in the city. Now, King Janak had made this what we considered most impossible tournament, that anyone who could pick up and string the bow of Lord Shiva would get the hand of his daughter Sita. Now when Ram came into the kingdom, he was there and he had associated with some of the citizens. He heard the story of Ahalya. Ahalya, that's another story. Would you like to hear the story of Ahalya? Okay. Ahalya was a pure personality. She had performed austerities and penances, and she married one of the greatest of all sages, Gautama Muni. She was the epitome of all good qualities. But Indra gets a little out of hand sometimes. Not sometimes, but anyway. And he saw Ahalya, so he decided to try to enjoy her. So when Gautama Muni came to, or actually left, Indra disguised himself as Gautama Muni. And he came and he made advancement. And his wife was thinking, what is my husband doing? This is not the right time. He just went away to perform some bath in the holy rivers. Now he's coming about and acting like this. But then she could understand it was not her husband. It was actually another person. Later on, she found out, but she gave in. And when she gave in, she was so sorry. So Indra had defiled Ahalya. She was unhappy. Indra left. When her husband came back, he found out the whole situation. He became so angry. Gautama Muni was one of the most powerful Munis at the time. Therefore, he said, because you have remained unchaste, therefore I curse you to become a stone. You will stay a stone as long as you have not met the personality of Godhead, Sri Ram. He will come after many years and free you from this situation. So he turned her into a stone. Haribo. That's pretty horrible, isn't it? When your wife becomes a stone. Sometimes people like that, but anyway, that's a whole different story. That's modern day dramas, anyway. Which has nothing to do with what we're saying. But anyway, when we talk about Grihastha life, we can span the possibilities. Indra, he cursed Indra that you will have vaginas all over your body. He said, you are after this, so therefore you can have as much as you want. His body was full of it. And then he got relieved of that curse and they all turned into eyes. But Indra was in a really embarrassing situation for a long time. He couldn't even go out in public. Obvious. And so, Ram heard the whole story and he said, where is Ahalya? And they said, well, she is actually nearby the kingdom of Janak. He came and he touched Ahalya. He freed her from the curse and she offered wonderful prayers and worshiped. So this was another, what we say, reason why Vishwamitra Muni took Ram out of Ayodhya to free Ahalya from that curse. It wasn't her fault. She was misled and tricked, but still she succumbed, and therefore she was forced to get a reaction for that. While Ram was walking around the kingdom, he saw this beautiful girl who just happened to be on her terrace looking down. His eyes glanced, her eyes glanced at him. Their eyes locked for what seemed like for eternity, but was only a minute. Ram felt something inside that he had never felt before. And she felt the same thing. Their natural attraction was awakened by this very brief meeting. Ram went on. Then Vishwamitra Muni said, let us go to the assembly. Now this bull was sitting in this case, and this bull was the cause of a lot of what we say battles. Because anyone who could string the bull would get Sita as their wife. So kings came from all over to do it, and they couldn't do it. Even Ravana came to try to string the bow. Just to pick up the bow was difficult. They couldn't even pick it up. It was so heavy. And so at one point, the king said, Janak, you're making this match so unfair. Therefore, you should pay for this. All the kings got together and they attacked the kingdom of Janak. Janak and all his armies repelled all these kings. So he had difficulties, but he didn't want to change his promise. Only that person who could pick up and string this bow will be suitable to be the husband of my daughter. Why did he say that? Why did he make it so difficult? One day, Sita, she was a little girl. She was about 12 years old. She was playing with her friends, and they were playing ball. And the ball rolled underneath the bow. And the ball was underneath. Sita came over, picked up the bow, and pulled the ball out and put it down. Janak saw that. No one could even pick it up. And she picked it up like it was a piece of straw. So easily, nonchalantly, like it was nothing. Janak realized, wow, my daughter is very special. So that's why he made that condition. So now Ram was there. So Vishwamitra Muni said, Ram would like to demonstrate his power and also win the hand of Sita. Sita was watching from a balcony. She was thinking, I hope he succeeds. Everybody else has failed. I hope he succeeds. Now, Ram didn't know that the same person that he locked hearts and eyes with when she was standing was the same person that was the daughter of Janak. He didn't make that connection, at least at that point. So now, there is a big suspense, and all there's sages, there's great kings, the assembly is full. They're watching Ram, he's a 16-year-old boy. He comes. They have to pull the bow out with 300 men on ropes to move the bow on a wheels cart to bring it into the assembly. It is so heavy. Finally, they lift the glass where the bow is kept. It was kept in this beautiful glass. Ram goes over, looks, and now Sita's praying. She's praying with all her hearts. Vishwamitra Muni is smiling. He knows Ram's going to do it. Janak is praying. This person has to be the husband of my daughter. He has all good qualities. Simply by seeing Ram, he knew this person is powerful and qualified. Ram went over, looked at the bow, and with his left hand, not his right hand, he picked the bow up, went like this. Everybody in the assembly went, whoa! There was a gigantic roar of cheer and congratulation and applause. But it wasn't over. He took the bow. He put it down. He put his left foot on the bottom of the bow. He took the string, and with his right hand, he put the string in the top. And then he pulled back the bow. I'm not going to do it again. He pulled back the bow. And when he pulled it, he kept pulling it back, and it broke. The bow broke in half. And when that broke, the sound reverberated through the entire universes, and animals died, women had miscarriages, the earth trembled in shock. It shook the entire world. Of course, you know, anyway, I don't want to make it sound so bad, but it was actually auspicious because that sound was so purifying. And then, of course, everybody in the assembly fell down. They couldn't even stand up except for Janak, Sita, Lakshman, and Vishwamitra Muni. Everyone else fell to the ground when they heard this, when that bow cracked. Janak smiled. Vishwamitra Muni knew he was going to do it. And then it was time for the victory garland. So Sita, she had the garland. And she came with her head covered, and she came over to put the garland of victory on her future husband. And she was so nervous and so at the same time so anticipating with happiness. It's kind of like nervousness but happiness together. She was nervous in a happy way. And she lifted the garland and she couldn't move it past a certain. So Ram picked her arms up and moved it up higher. And she put it over. And then she looked down and she saw the same feet that she saw when she saw from the balcony. Because when she looked at him, she saw his whole transcendental body. She recognized this is the same person. And when she removed the covering a little later on, then Ram understood it was Sita Devi. So they're eternally related. They can never be separated. For this particular pastime, they came together. Now there was a grand celebration. A marriage was about to be performed. But Ram said something that blew everybody's mind. He does that. He blows your mind. Everybody's happy. It's joyous. And guess what he says? I can't get married unless my father gives me permission. He was dutiful. He was a son that always had allegiance to whatever his father requested. And being a dutiful son, he wanted to ask his father. So there was a procession, and not by Ram, but a group of people went to Ayodhya, which was a long way away from King Janaka's Mithila, and informed Dasarath of what happened and asked on behalf of Ram permission. He immediately came with all his servants, his ministers, and his intimate associates, and they came on procession to be part of the wedding. Just by coming, he gave permission for the wedding to go on. But Vishwamitra Muni, he had another plan. He decided, why only have one marriage? Let's get everybody married. So he said, actually, you have another, there was two other daughters, Manvi, Shruti Kirti, and Irmala. There was three others. Both, one was also the sister of Sita, and the other two were cousin brothers who had daughters. So, and of course, Bart, Satrughan, and Lakshman were all there for the wedding. So let's get them all married. So Lakshman married Irmala, and Bart married Manavi, and Satrughna married Shruti Kirti. So there was a four-way wedding. All four brothers were married. And it was a grand celebration. A grand celebration. Janak was so happy. And of course, so was everyone. Sita and Ram were united in loving relationships. And then, of course, they went back to the kingdom of Ayodhya to live after some time, not immediately. While they were on their way back, something happened. Ram was there, and all of a sudden, this jungle-like person, who was very fierce and had a bow in his hand, came out, and he said, and he was very challenging and very angry, he said, "I heard you broke Shiva's bow." Who was this person? Parsaram, and he was angry. He said, "I was sitting in Mahendra Hill in meditation, and the sound of that bow broke my meditation. So, poof, I'm angry." And it was Shiva's bow. Now, I have Vishnu's bow. This is even more powerful. And he was very challenging. So he kept challenging Ram to a fight. Dasarath was scared. He's the 16-year-old boy against Parasaram, who's just been ridding the world of Kshatriya kings one after another. Now he's angry. He's after my son. Dasarath said, "Please, actually, Parasaram, you know, he should be forgiving." He was kind of using all kinds of excuses not for him not to get angry at Ram. Finally, at one point, Ram did something just to pacify his father. He grabbed the bow from the hand of Parasaram with such speed, he pulled the bow back and said, where should I put this arrow? Should I shoot it at you, or should I shoot it at your legs? If this arrow is released, it'll do two things. It'll destroy the benefits of all your austerities, and if you choose not, I'll cripple you. This was Ram. Parasaram was shocked. He had never met anybody like this before. Because this was Vishnu's bow, and only Vishnu. So the two Vishnus were like arguing with each other. Vishnu against Vishnu. So Parasaram said, "I actually need my legs to get back to Mahendra Hill to perform my austerities. So please take all my religious credits." And so he shot the arrow, and of course it went a distance away. And at that time, Parasaram lost all his, what we say, spiritual credits, or we say austerity. And then he left. When Dasarath saw that, he never forgot. When he went through, always trying to remember the prowess of his son, he remembered the incident with Parasaram. Because Parasaram was so powerful. Parasaram was out to get Dasarath. This is something early in the pastime. Parasaram wanted to destroy all the Kshatriya kings because he felt that all the kings were all, what we say, unqualified. They were dacoits. He didn't like Kshatriyas for some reason. But he had one rule. He would never kill a Kshatriya king if he was engaged in a marriage. So Dasarath, every time Parasaram was coming, he would get married again. Just to keep Parasaram away. So that's how he got 353 wives. Because every time Parasaram came to Ayodhya to challenge Dasarath, he would arrange for a wedding. And Parasaram, true to his word, would never do anything, and he would go away and then come back again. Well, then there would be another wedding going on. So, so this was going on. And so when he saw his own son defeat Parasaram, he was amazed. He couldn't understand who his son was. He never thought he was God, but he understood he's a very powerful person. So, of course, then they went back to the kingdom of Ayodhya. And tomorrow I'll tell the story of the intrigue that led to Ram and Lakshman and Sita going into the forest. That intrigue has a lot of deep, 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 deep spiritual messages. What can we learn from what I explained today? That austerity, penances, and various types of self-sacrifices, if they're not directed towards what we say, devotion to the Supreme Personality, if they're not meant for our spiritual advancement, they simply cause the mind to become proud and the heart to become hard. A hard heart cannot practice devotion. Austerities are necessary. By austerities, one can reach the platform of bhakti. But austerities are not done. Just like sometimes people want to become very famous. So they perform some great austerities by giving up. Just like Prabhupada said, a child or a young man or a young lady will go to a university and they want to get their degree. They want to be excelled in their class. So there are so many, what we say, diversions or attractions. Their friends are inviting them to parties. They have chances to do so many things. They say no. They focus only on their studies. And when they're done, they actually come out with great grades. It's a kind of austerity. The politicians will give up their sleep, will travel all around just to get votes. Austerities. Sometimes devotees will perform austerities in order to become, to think, I'm advanced, right? Just see, I'm chanting. There was one yogi, not yogi, but devotee who joined Krishna consciousness. He was chanting 64 rounds every day. This was in the beginning of the movement. And he was thinking how to perform more and more austerities. Finally, he went to Mayapur and was chanting 64, and he was living in a tree. He would stay up in the tree the whole day, come down at night to sleep, and then go back and chant all day. Devotees would come to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, this is what he's doing. Prabhupada said, let him go. Prabhupada didn't stop him. But he said, this is not good. Actually, he's not really performing bhakti in the right way. These austerities are simply meant for his own aggrandizement, to attract attention, to get some kind of power. And Vishwamitra Muni did that, but he wound up giving it all up just to become a devotee. A devotee has all power because they're connected with Krishna. And so austerity really means, what is austerity in Krishna consciousness? Two things. Chant the holy names of the Lord. Yajnai sankirtana prayaya janti hi sumedasa. Develop attraction for chanting. Chant more. We say chant 16 rounds, but guess what? Prabhupada said 16 is just the beginning. It's just the beginning because by chanting 16 rounds every day, we develop a taste for chanting. If that taste doesn't come, then we're not actually chanting in the right mood. And when the taste comes, then you want to chant more. Because chanting is our yajyai sankirtana prayai yajanti hi sumeda saha. This is the austerity in this age. To develop attraction for and to chant the holy names more and more and more. Prabhupada said, chant always. Chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. That is an austerity. Just like sometimes, of course, Ljubljana is famous for kirtan programs. It's one of the most famous temples in all of Europe for kirtans. But when we sit in kirtan, do we actually absorb ourselves completely in the holy name during the whole time? The mind wanders. We want to go someplace else. I'm hungry. It's too hot. Oh. Because it is a yajna to chant. It's a yajna. That's why it's called japa yajna, or the austerity in this age to chant the holy names of the Lord. When we chant our japa, we chant 16 rounds, we think, boy, I got that done. Now I can kind of loosen up a little. No, but we should think, this is the best time of the day. This is the time I can meet Krishna in the holy name. This is the time I can purify my heart. This is the time I can fix my mind on the essence of spiritual growth, chant in Krishna's holy name. And so it is a yajna. There's no question about it. So we don't have to perform all these other difficult austerities. All we have to do is develop an attraction and an eagerness. An eagerness and then an attraction. For chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the second austerity, and of course there's many, is to learn how to associate with and serve Vaishnavas. This is an art, the art of bhakti. How to see each and every person that you associate with as an opportunity for that, to serve that person, and therefore grow in your own spiritual life. To see everyone as an object of your service, not as your object of your enjoyment. If we can see like that, then association with devotees is wonderful. When we come in the association of devotees, we should think, let me figure out how to serve. And if all we have to do is chant or hear, then that is service also. That is also service. Because it is done in the mood of devotion. It's done in the mood of obedience to the instructions of the spiritual master. So to associate with, to develop friendship with devotees, and to chant the holy names, these are the austerities in this age. These are the austerities in this age. But these bring us to perfection. These bring us to perfection. So we learn so many things from the Shastras. Vishwamitra Muni teaches us what not to do. Not to try to get power for your own success. Finally he learned and he became a great devotee. But he had to go through all that difficulty just to learn the hard way. The hard way. Learning, there's two ways to learn. Learn by hearing. When you hear what is truth and you accept it, you follow it, you make advancement. Hear by learning by making mistakes and avoiding those mistakes in the future. That's the way we, most of us, learn. But there's another way, is that you make a mistake and you learn that it's a mistake and you still do the mistake again. That way doesn't get anywhere. That's not a learning process. That's simply unable to change. So how do we change is associate with devotees who have those qualities that you want to become like. You want to become like someone? Associate with those persons and serve those persons. And then you develop those qualities gradually like that. So this is the art of bhakti. So tomorrow, it's already 7:45 and I was supposed to end at 7:30, right? So tomorrow I'll tell the story of the intrigue which led to the banishing of Sita, Ram and Lakshman to the forest. This is so important in our Krishna consciousness, this particular part of the Ramayana. Okay, before I end, Any comments or questions? You have a comment? Question?
In the first austerity instead stripping of Krishna only and not to ever forget him?
That is the, he's asking, is the greatest austerity in this
sect?
The first austerity.
Third
austerity. If you do that, you're doing everything. There's 64 principles that are mentioned in the Shastras for our conduct. 44 you do, there's 20 you avoid. So it says that these are called rules and regulations. If you follow two, then you follow all 64. What is those two? Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So this is the highest religious principle. But to come to that stage means to practice bhakti seriously. So when you're remembering Krishna, you're remembering the holy name. When you're remembering Krishna, you're also serving the Vaishnava. You're doing everything. Everything is included by always remembering Krishna, never forgetting Krishna. So it's perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Chandranana, is that it? Huh? Gouda Chandranana. I have to have the Gouda. Thank you. Yeah. And then he became a Vaishnava.
Yeah. So when he was going to Dasharath for Ram and Lakshman to help him get rid of the demons, could we say that he was being selfish because it was actually not his dharma? He was just taking up another dharma. And he was selfish not wanting to get rid of his past activities and wanted to engage Shri Krishna in service?
Well, he was thinking... these sacrifices are for the benefit of the entire human population. And these demons are destroying the sacrifice. So for himself, he was not trying to gain anything from the sacrifice. He was trying to allow the sacrifice to go on and so everyone would benefit. So he was thinking of the welfare of others at that point. He wasn't thinking of... Because, yeah, he could have done it himself, but he didn't want to act outside of his dharma. He wasn't in a position to act as a kshatriya. He had done that in the past. Now he was a Brahmin, but at the same time, a devotee. He told Dasarath, I could do it myself, but it's not my duty, it's not my dharma. Yeah, it does in that sense, yeah. It refers to that. He knew that Ram was there and Ram was qualified to do it. And at the same time, if you look at it deeper, you understand that there was a reason why to take Ram away from Ayodhya. To get him married to Sita, to free Ahalya. And also, there was many other adventures that they went through together in these travels. But ultimately, yeah, he didn't want to act outside of his dharma, if you look at it from that level of understanding. He had done that before. He was tired of it. Does that help? Thank you. Anything else? Ram Leela? Yes, Prabhu. And it seems unfair, doesn't it? Well, Gautam Muni didn't think it was unfair. But you look at it from another perspective, she got the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was Ram that freed her from that. And she became a glorious lady and famous for having the darshan. And she also offered beautiful prayers to Ram after receiving his mercy. So, yeah. So from that point of view, yeah. But if you look at her offense, you might say Gautama was a little strong. But if you take it from Vedic culture, the duty of a wife is to follow the husband with all chastity and all faithfulness. She deviated from that. That was a great sin. A woman's power is in her faithfulness and her chastity. A woman's disgrace is when she breaks that and acts according to what we say, sensual attractions. She had a qualified husband. Gautama Muni was powerful. And he was qualified in all ways. Mm-hmm. The story of her becoming his wife is also mentioned there. That's a beautiful story. Ahalya is considered to be, you know, she's considered to be the perfection of chastity. Although she appeared to have broken that chastity, she was tricked. Okay, so next thing is prasadam. I'm sure you're all looking forward to that. Kirtan. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Okay, so we have four more classes on Ram Leela. Thank you very much. Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanand, Hari 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 Hari